answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are here with us on this weekend. Or perhaps you listen to us on a podcast that you get from iTunes or from moneymatters.com, and you're listening to us there. Glad you are here with us as we broadcast out of our studios in Northern California, where we've been broadcasting out of Northern California for just about 21 years now. Yeah. And glad you're here with us, both myself and my co-host, Pat. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays working with people like yourself and come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. And we talk about all things financial and take calls, answer questions. We've got a great program lined up. And talk a little bit about Apple.
A little bit.
And kind of what's happening with their stock. And actually, a little deeper than that, I think what lessons an investor can learn, whether it's this company or any other company?
For product development and sales.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is really important to the price of a company's stock.
And we've got actually a number of good things lined up on the program. You'll just have to wait and hear. To join the show, if you want to call with a question for us regarding anything financially related, your retirement savings,
401ks, 403bs, 457, if someone's pitching you a big fat life insurance policy, which we've been seeing quite a bit of lately, people coming in and saying,
We like life insurance. There's a need for it. Matter of fact, oftentimes as financial planning, we'll say, you need life insurance.
Yeah. But we
low-cost term life insurance.
In most cases, low-cost
term life insurance. 99% of the time.
Yeah, low-cost term life insurance. Not a big,
universal life.
Insurance policy disguised as a retirement
investment.
Plan.
Oh, for crying out loud.
But we've seen quite a bit of it lately. Quite a bit of that. It's coming through our offices, talking to our advisors. They're saying that people are getting pitched all kinds of garbage.
The challenge here, by the way, here's the interesting thing we're in right now. With interest rates as low as they are, people are looking for other solutions. Like, my gosh, interest rates are so low, I need to do something else.
And the market's being flat.
The stock market's not going anywhere.
I got to do something with this money. This thing is not growing.
It's not growing. It's been a couple of years. It's not growing. I got to do something. So what happens is people start looking for things
they call alternatives.
Whatever that means.
Correct. Right? So Wall Street isn't immune to this. These insurance companies aren't immune to this. They start pitching you big indexed annuities or life insurance policies or something that's got this or guarantees. I'm talking to an advisor here in the office. Last week, this gentleman is retiring from a company. He came in and he said, hey, you're the third firm I've met with. The first one said I could get a guaranteed 7%. The second firm said a guaranteed 9%.
Use
the word guaranteed. We didn't use the word guaranteed. They used the word guaranteed.
And he was here, Pat, not thinking we were going to say 10. He knew it sounded too good to be true.
He knew it sounded good. Or he would have given those people that money. Correct.
I mean,
yeah. There's no such thing.
Work with a fiduciary financial advisor, registered investment advisor, fee-based advisor, someone who's not working for commission. The problem is someone's working for commission, they're always conflicted.
Actually, rule of thumb, don't give your money to anyone that uses the word guarantee. Just flat out. If they use the word guarantee, don't use them.
Unless it's really low, guarantee 1%.
It's not guaranteed. You can't guarantee a 1%.
You can guarantee a government bond at maturity date.
At 1%.
Correct. Yeah. Anyway, our number to join the program, 1-888.
But Scott, that price of the bond still fluctuates over that 12-month
period. Yeah, I know. That's why I wouldn't say it.
Right?
I said at maturity point.
At maturity date.
Assuming you held it to maturity and you didn't freak out when the price was down, but you might freak out when the price was down because that's what investors tend to do.
So.
1-888-2-HANSON. I'm trying to get up with the number. We've been going on for 4 minutes. I can't even get the number. Maybe someone wants to call.
Okay.
1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 888-242-6766.
All right, for the listeners. See what I have to go through? His name comes first, Hanson McLean. His 800-888-2-HANSEN.
It's 888, not 800. Because that's what you wonder why
Hansen.
They see it the first thing. They can't even get the number out without getting it wrong.
2-HANSEN. Hansen McClain. Then
I've been carrying
get on the
for
show.
21 years. 23, get, 4 of how many years?
Get on the show, pushed around, told what to do.
Pushed around.
Me and my Irish brethren will not stand for it anymore.
Oh, for crying out loud. Right. Use the Irish. Anytime something's not going quite well, that brings out this thing.
The ancestry's been downtrodden, abused for so many. The continued exploitation.
My stepmother, who raised me as a young man, I have a mother as well. She's a wonderful woman, but I have the benefit of two families, I suppose. She was from Great Britain, and she moved over when I was 4 years old or whatever. And remember back in the day, that was when the IRA was having bombs go off somewhere. So as a kid, you don't really know anything. All I would know is my stepmother. Every once in a while, the news would come on, bloody Irish! Bloody Irish! And then when she found out I was going into business with an Irish, bloody Irish!
Actually, I married an English girl.
Oh, you did? Bring the fighting right into the house.
I just wanted to up close and personal.
There we go. All right, let's take some calls here. We'll start with Roger. Roger, you're with Hanson McClain.
Hello, guys.
Hey, Roger.
I would like to ask you questions about negative interest rates, since I guess Japan is going to them and there's some other countries. Do you think that will ever happen in the U.S.? And my understanding of negative interest rates is that if you have money in the bank, you'll be charged fees for keeping it there. And where would be a good place to stick the money if they do?
Well, Roger, it has happened in the U.S. For large corporations that have large cash balances.
And we did see the T-bill
just
negative
for like a day or so.
A couple seconds.
Yeah,
wow,
it wasn't. Yeah, long time ago. But
not that long ago. But,
a negative interest rate for cash balances for large corporations, I don't believe they're negative anymore, but they were negative at some point in time, which means that if you were a large multinational and you had $250 million in cash and you were the treasurer of this company and you said, hey, I want to park it at Bank of America or Wells Fargo or you name the institution, they would say, yeah, we're not really interested in actually holding on to that money. But if you pay us, we will keep that money for you. And that's when they went.
The challenge is
not technically negative, but negative in those particular situations.
And the thought behind us is banks, their bank reserves, they have to do something with them, right? So you invest your money in the bank, they turn around and make loans with those dollars. They keep some on reserve, but they make loans. But any loans they don't have, the reserves they have, they've got to invest somewhere. So that negative rates is really designed for the banks to encourage them to loan money. Now, the challenge that I always see with it is this essentially forces banks to lower their credit standards because if the penalty's bad enough, they'll loan to anybody, right? We hope you can repay, but heck, we can't keep it now because it's costing us a fortune in these reserves. So here, take it, please. So that's there's a lot of negative consequences from negative rates. Now, I think your question said, do we believe it could ever happen here? I wouldn't have, if you would have asked me 10 years ago, if I would have ever thought interest rates would be low as they are today, I would say, no way, it's impossible. And most people would have said, there's no way rates are going to be as low as they are, but here we are. And if you would have asked me, will there ever be negative interest rates anywhere in the world? I'd say,
that makes no sense whatsoever.
It makes no sense. Yes.
Yeah, it makes no sense. I mean, money has absolutely negative value.
So, I mean, never say never. We don't really know. What we do know is that we saw the Fed increase our interest rates not too long ago, and it's looking likely that there'll be another increase June of this year. Small, but it's looking like an increase.
But for an individual, probably wouldn't have to worry about negative interest rates, right?
Not yet.
Not yet.
I mean, of all things to worry about in life,
how much lower could they get in your account, Roger, before they get negative? For most people, it would be 0.25%.
Yeah, on cash balances.
On cash balances.
They're very low now.
I mean, if you're great at shopping for bank deposits, you'll get 1.2% on your money. That's if you're really good at shopping for it. So it wouldn't be a big concern of ours. It wouldn't be a good concern of. And
I think it's more concerned economically. What it does.
The biggest question, though, the big concern is how do you get out of this low interest rate environment? Forget negative. How do you get out of this low interest rate environment in such a fashion that you don't cause an inflationary or deflationary environment? That's what the big concern is right now.
Do you think the national debt growing as it isn't a concern for higher interest?
Oh, no, because Donald Trump will have it paid off in 7 years. That's what he said. He's going to make it all great. Okay. Go away. I'm joking. The national debt is clearly a problem.
Scott, you might say that, and I'm not a huge fan of Donald Trump, but he's one of the few people that is actually even talking about it. Whether his solution makes sense or not, right?
It's not a priority right now to the average American reason. And it should be.
It should be. Actually, what the biggest priority to the average American should be state municipality debt.
I had a personal conversation with Ben Bernanke about a year ago. I was at one of these conference things. He was a paid speaker. Afterwards, I was some VIP thing of some sort.
How'd you get in? Were you serving drinks?
I took someone else's name tag.
walking away with the appetizer tray? Is that how you get in?
I was working there.
Did you see a bow tie on? And a conversation with Ben Bernanke. He said, would you like shrimp canopy? What Scott said.
No. Because I wanted to ask. I said, I think Roger, I kind of see where we're going. So I said, here's the challenge we've got. I said, with the amount of debt we have right now, with interest rates so low, we can service our debt relatively easily.
Easy.
What happens when interest rates go back to where they were of even a few years ago? How do we then manage the debt service? And he said, you're not going to have higher interest rates without a growing economy, so it's not a problem at all. And I said, I wanted to have a conversation, and he did not want to talk. You could tell he changed that subject and didn't want to go back to it.
Because they don't know how they're going to service it. But Scott, out of all the debt in the U.S. right now, I was thinking about this. I actually had this conversation. It was my wife's birthday, and we went away for the weekend, and then we were driving down.
And you were talking about the debt.
I was talking to her.
Honey, happy birthday. Do you see the federal debt?
And I said to her, you know what the danger is not the federal debt or corporate debt. Right now,
it's a personal debt. Have you seen?
No, it's municipality and state debt. That's the danger to the economy.
It's a danger to the economy. I would agree with you.
Okay.
Yes, and well, it's
appreciate the call,
kind
Roger.
Of there. Yeah, do appreciate the call. We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
All right, welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. So the pro voice, the person that said the intro, advice without an agenda.
Yes.
I don't think that's 100% a fair statement, because I certainly have an agenda. And the agenda is that people don't get ripped off by financial advisors.
That's your only agenda? That keeps
Well, that's the thing that the advisors in our firm share stories among each other, and the thing that bothers you the most.
All right, I'm going to go full disclosure here.
Okay.
All right? So, in an email I sent out today, full disclosure, Hanson McLean, we have a business, an investment advisory firm. We have about 4,000 households that we serve, billions of dollars that we manage, and a team of great advisors. And our business comes to us a lot through referrals, clients referring their friends. But one of the things that with our advisors, we're always continuing to train them on, they have lots of training, continue education with their credentials and whatnot. But also we train them on some of the softer side of things, the best way to communicate with a client, the best way to get a client to do some things that,
To understand a client emotionally.
Yeah, to help
it's them. It's a relationship.
But also part of that is there was some discussion in an email about referrals and about an advisor not feeling comfortable asking for referrals or something along those lines. And so I said, I actually said in the next training, I said, why don't we have a discussion on the benefits of referrals? Now, I know the conversation is going to start off, oh, it's good because then we have clients coming to the firm. But it's going to quickly lead to these stories of, I can't tell you, every week someone comes into our office and meets with an advisor who's got a financial problem that was created
by an advisor.
By an advisor. A financial problem that was created by, I had a conversation today with an advisor about a client who was a friend of mine that a good chunk of the money was locked up in this high expense index annuity. A friend of mine.
That bought.
And a very bright gentleman.
Otherwise.
Super educated, brilliant surgeon. And a bunch of money locked up in this thing. And we had this and there's not a day that there's, maybe there's a day.
So that's
there's
our agenda.
There's not a week that goes by that we don't see somebody who's been harmed, financially harmed by someone in the financial services.
Normally it's because they actually don't understand what they bought. And there was no fiduciary responsibility from the person that was recommending the problem, the product for the problem.
Creating the problem.
It was a commission. It was a commission. That's what.
So, in full disclosure, I want our advisors to be better at explaining to our clients
why they should send us referrals.
Why it's in their best interest to let their friends know about, if it's not Hanson McLean, at least the fiduciary approach, but really at Hanson McLean. I at least know that if they come here, we're going to be honest with them. We're going to tell them a straight story. If they come in and they plan on retiring and they can't afford it, we're going to say, look, you can't afford to retire. I know you want to retire, but you just can't afford it. If they're retired and taking out too much money, we will say, look, you can't live. You can't keep spending this much money. You're going to run out of money at age 74 or whatever it is.
If they're retired,
we tell them those things.
And they're not taking out as much money as they can, we will tell them. You can afford to take out more money as well.
We tell people as it is.
What they need to hear, not necessarily what they want to hear. So we started this conversation by talking about the pro voice that said, without an agenda.
Okay. Well, I have an agenda. You heard part of our agenda. It's part of our agenda.
It is part of the agenda.
And to help people really figure out what they want their money to do for them.
For them. It's a tool.
Money's just a tool.
It's a tool. It's a tool.
And it's a good tool.
I'd rather have the tool than not.
I mean, a whole chest of tools for that matter. Better than no tools.
I've been to the no tool side and it wasn't that much fun.
But we also know that once our basic needs are covered,
then
the additional tools doesn't necessarily equate to additional happiness. And sometimes, Pat, we see people with large net worths that they really overcomplicate their life because they think, oh, I've got this much money. Surely I need to do all these
this
things.
Thing
and the
or
next
this
thing,
thing
you know, they got 10 different types of investment. They're in this partnership here and they got this joint venture thing here and they got, and then you're like, whoa.
You didn't help anything. You just made it more complicated.
Made it more complicated. And thinking, you know, you have enough money. You could have been really pretty basic with everything and it would have been fine.
Yeah. So anyway. Thank you for listening.
Anyway, if
you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON, 888-2-HANSON. And before we start talking about this Apple stock.
Before we start talking about it, that's what I talk about now instead of one of the calls.
Plug your book, Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement. This is a book Scott Hanson wrote. It is deeply discounted if you go to our website, moneymatters.com/book.
Almost 25 cents off.
It's like half price or something.
Something like that.
We've been selling lots of them.
Yeah, like we've sold like 12 or 13. I'm just kidding. We've sold thousands. I don't know how many we've sold.
I don't know.
Whatever. We just had to order more. That's all I know. I got an email. They know we had to get more books printed.
Okay.
They can't keep the printing going fast enough. They've had incredible.
The presses.
The press. They're working, printing them out.
Okay. So anyway, Apple stock. The darling of Wall Street.
Yeah, Apple, not that long ago, was at $133 a share. Right? It fell down below $100 a share, and then it's bounced around kind of the $100 range for some time.
This is not unusual for a large company stock to have growth problems in its upward trajectory over a period of time. And the reason is it's a consumer product stock. You could call it whatever you want. You could call it a technology stock. You could call it a communication stock. But at the end of the day, it's a consumer product that they're selling.
Or consumer service with their
platform
streaming service.
Right. So you buy the platform, the hardware, and then you subscribe to their services.
That's right.
Right. The problem with that growth is that, as in any company, if they're highly profitable, any company that's highly profitable attracts competitors.
Yes.
And in this case, they've attracted some really good operating competitors, like companies like Google and their Android system. And they want to go head to head with them. The second thing is, we all have a marginal propensity to consume, where at some point in time, the added outlay of money doesn't bring as much satisfaction as the added outlay of money. So what we've seen with Apple devices is that as they come out with new ones, that they're not selling as quickly as they have historically. So they come out with Apple 5, 6, 6S. The sales haven't ramped as quickly at the price points that they're charging.
Yeah, it's interesting. So while you're talking, Pat, I pulled my phone out of its case. I don't even know what I have. I think it's a 5 or 5S.
Well, you have to actually go into the
operating system.
Operating system. It will tell you.
Well, then no wonder. I can't see. I can barely even operate the thing.
So here is the idea behind this whole concept is that the companies that are the hot companies today aren't necessarily going to be the hot companies or the hot stock next week or the year after. And the larger a company grows, the harder it is to grow the large company. So if you think about it, if you started with $100 million in sales and you grew at 25%, right? That's pretty good growth. But the same company at $10 billion in sales growing at 25% is much, much more difficult. So that is something to keep in mind when you're looking at a stock or any investment for that matter, which is historical rates of return matter, but they're not always predictive of future rates of return on individual companies or especially sectors.
Well, I can't figure out
we're doing a radio show.
I know. I'm sitting there looking. It's funny though. But I've had the same phone.
And why haven't you upgraded?
I don't see the benefit of it.
There we go.
This thing works great.
Would you consider yourself a good user of Apple?
I love them. I love the company.
We're an Apple family.
I've got all kinds of Apple products.
We have four kids.
We just bought an Apple TV. The price was next to nothing. I forget what it was.
So
we didn't buy the latest version because I was told it doesn't really make much difference. And so we bought an older version of the Apple TV. And I don't even know what it does. Now I think about it, but they say it's good. But my phone in the case is falling apart. My wife teases me because my case is falling apart.
But it's fine.
I say it's fine. She's like, yeah, but look at it. I said, what do I care at my phone? Look, no, who sees my
phone? So the point being.
The phone's used for all the
back,
other.
Back to the. As much as we'd love to talk about your Apple phone, I'm trying to demonstrate a point here, which is when you're investing and people are showing you graphs and charts of individual stocks, right, or even sectors, it isn't always predictive. In fact, the better a particular thing does, the greater the probability that it's going to do poorly or at least not as well in the future. That's just the way. Everything reverts to its average.
Well, and I tell you.
What drives company stock prices over time are earnings.
Oftentimes, it's the darling companies that by the time everyone's talking about them are sometimes when. And you can get. Look, there's a lot of companies right now that get a lot of press that look hot and kind of a fad one as of recently. Shake Shack.
Yep.
Burgers and stuff. Started in New York. They had this huge valuation when they came out. When public stock went up. Stock's down over 60% from a year ago.
Yeah.
A lot of investors got
that wasn't
out.
Hard to see, though.
No, of course not. That was an easy one. And I'm not trying to compare the two, but I did compare the two. Okay, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll start taking some calls. 1-888-2-HANSEN's the number. 888-2-HANSEN. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Are you questioning if the advice you receive from your stockbroker or financial advisor is best for you? If so, run it by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Simply visit their website at moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSEN. That's 1-888-2-HAN-SON. Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Yeah, welcome back to Hanson McLean. Scott Hanson here.
Pat McLean.
Thanks for being with us as we talk about financial matters. Yeah, you know, by the way, we're about to go to the phones here and talk to Jim. I would like to bring back sometime, Pat, your... We did a segment a few years ago at Pat's Childhood Jobs. Is that what we called it?
Something like that. Jobs Pat's had.
Yeah, Pat. It was hilarious. Because you had, you're like selling cactuses at the flea market.
Delivering yellow page phone books door to door, painting addresses on curves. I've had a lot of different jobs.
As a child, not since...
No, all the way through college, but...
yeah, but not like the last 5 years.
No.
I've had a lot of jobs. Well, I was a plumbing contractor 4 years ago. Before that, I was a dental hygienist. And now I'm a financial planner.
So why do you want to bring this segment back?
Because it was funny. It was actually quite humorous. Some of the jobs you had...
I've had my fair share of bosses, some great, some dumb as dirt. And you know who you are.
Well, you called someone out last time, his whole first and last name and everything.
Oh, yeah, Octavius.
Okay, that's it. Anyway, it was a fun segment.
He was a maitre d' at a restaurant, he told us. Oh, you just think about it. He was a maitre d' at a restaurant, and he said, I won't try to do his accent, but he said, if you want good tables, you're going to have to bring me something to smoke, and I don't mean cigarettes.
How old were you?
I was 21. He was an old guy. He was probably 50-something, and he was telling us that...
How old are you? 53.
But he was an old guy back then. He might have been 60. It looked like he was 90, but he kept saying...
That's because you were 20.
I know. But he kept saying, you know, you need to bring me something to smoke if you want a good table with this.
And did you?
Greek. No, I didn't give him anything.
These days, I guess it wouldn't be hard to get.
I don't know. Yeah.
Anyway.
I was long for that job.
I didn't want this to start turning into a marijuana discussion, but somehow, with Pat, it always reverses. No matter what it is. Starts talking about the dispensary or something.
Oh, actually, there's some great, well, we have an office in Denver, but there's been some great documentaries on Netflix and Frontline and a couple different
marijuana
on the dispensaries and the new industries it's creating and the regulatory problems and the taxation problems and the criminal elements behind
and the health problems
and they haven't
actually, behavioral problems
and they have behavioral problems. I was talking to an ER doctor. Asked him the question. I said, are you seeing a lot of marijuana overdoses? He said, I see a couple.
How do you overdose on marijuana?
He said, it's anxiety mostly. He said, it's they're flipping out. There's no, they can't do anything. They give them anxiety medicine to kind of bring them down. They get
freaked out or something?
Yeah, that's what he was telling me.
Isn't it supposed to relax you?
If they want to smoke, I don't have any interest in that.
We're not going to talk about this. This is not the topic. This is the financial program, so. 888-2-HANSON is our contact number. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766. We're talking with Jim. Jim, you're with Hanson McLean.
Okay, last week the issue came up regarding a financial planner or a fiduciary. You recommended a fiduciary. Can you tell me what questions you need to ask a person to determine whether he is a fiduciary or not?
That is a great question. And there's two types of financial, there's a number of different financial planners. There's fee-based financial planners.
You know, Jim, part of the challenge is anyone can call themselves a financial advisor. There's no regulatory rule that says you can't call yourself you can't call yourself a medical doctor unless you are a medical doctor. But you can call yourself a financial advisor regardless of what you are. So, Jim, you could go tomorrow and say, I'm a financial advisor because you decided you're a financial advisor. There are certified financial planners.
They're chartered financial consultants.
People that have designations
and
training.
But what you're looking for is a registered investment advisor.
So if you're looking, so I think Jim's question was, what are the questions to ask? So,
yes.
Are you in the right now trying to find a financial advisor?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've been in and out of different companies, and I just want to, you know, I haven't been real happy, frankly.
Yeah.
I just want to see what are their qualifications. I mean, do they have extra training, and do they have, I mean, are they involved with a bank, or are they involved with an insurance company?
Yep. So here's some basic things. First of all, I would want to find out what training and education do they have. Are they a certified financial planner or a chartered financial consultant? And the CFP, certified financial planner, is the biggie.
Do they have a degree? Do they have a degree from a college? Do they have a degree in business, economics, finance?
Those are important things. What's their, what have they been spending their career, etc.? But then you also want to ask, how are you compensated? Do you receive commissions from the sale of products in any way whatsoever? Do you get paid a commission from selling annuities, or get paid commissions from selling life insurance? Right? So finding out how they get paid. Now, you mentioned the word fiduciary. Fiduciary is where someone has a legal obligation to put their client's interest first. They have to put their client's interest above their own. It's a legal duty that they have. A fiduciary only will only lie on what's called a registered investment advisor. It's a classification of a regulatory organization, registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, where a firm would have a legal duty, legal obligation to put their client's interest above their own. So our opinion, the best financial advisors, you might find a great financial advisor at a big brokerage firm or whatnot, but by and large, if you want somebody who is a fiduciary, is forced to put your interest first, who works on a fee basis, not a commission basis, someone who works with a registered investment advisor firm is going to be your best bet, in our opinion. And then from there, it's the other things, the certified financial planner. But you also want to do a background check to see if there's been any regulatory issues. As a prime example, we're based out of Sacramento, and here in Sacramento, I know two prominent financial advisors. By the way, neither one of them are certified financial planners, to the best of my... No, neither one of them are certified financial planners. But they both do a lot of advertising, and they're out there, and I know of people that have used them. One filed bankruptcy during the financial crisis, and then owed the IRS $400,000. Now, and he talks about a diversified portfolio to avoid the financial downturns. Now, if I'm going to hire a financial advisor, I don't think I want someone who can't manage their own finances, who went bankrupt, right? So that's something you could easily find out, but people don't take the time. Another person was banned from the industry for 5 years. It's like an attorney being disbarred or a medical doctor being losing their license for 5 years, disbarred for 5 years, yet somehow is back out there. People have entrusted their money. There's an easy way to find this out, this information. It's there's an organization that has a way to check this. It's called Broker Check, like stockbroker, Broker Check. And if you simply Google Broker Check, it'll take you right to it. And from there, you can enter it. Let's say you're going to talk to an advisor. Let's say you say, I'm going to talk to Scott Hansen. I hear him on the radio. I want to talk to Scott Hansen. I wonder if he's a good advisor. You can go to Broker Check and enter Scott Hansen right on there.
And
Scott Hanson, and it'll give you my full background. It'll tell you
education,
how long I've been in the industry,
what sort of complaints have been filed against.
Has there been complaints? Is there ever been a bankruptcy? Are there liens, etc.? All that information is there. It legally has to be there. And unfortunately, Jim, so often people don't take the time to do that. Now, our website at moneymatters.com, we put together a 4 or 5 minute webinar
called Liars, Levies, and Lawsuits, the things your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. And it actually is a tutorial on how to do a background check.
The things you're talking about here.
About what the same question you asked. And it's a big deal because you cannot do a good deal with a bad person. It's impossible. It never happens. You cannot do a good deal with a bad person. So That's the first thing you want to look at.
It's almost better to do nothing than to get hooked up with the wrong person, obviously.
Well taken. But, exactly.
And that's what I've been doing. Okay, well, that's good. Broker check. So just go into Google, and that'll tell me, and then I go into your website, and you'll send me a web email regarding that?
Yeah, we'll send you a link. We'll send you over a link.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah, right. We'll send you the link after the program.
Right. Appreciate it. Take care.
For call. And as a special today,
we're going to send you Scott's book.
Yeah. Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement Transition. So we'll send that to you, Jim, and as well. But that was a good question. And unfortunately, Pat, it is amazing that we see people. This person who was barred from the industry, I saw that someone barred for 5 years. He had sold a professional. This was a highly educated professional, 9 different equity index annuities, all with the same company. 9. It's like whatever the investment problem was, the answer was an equity index annuity. High commission products. High commission
normally
equals
means
high fees. They might not see it, but they're high fees.
And normally high commissions also means illiquid.
Highly illiquid. Maybe money locked up 15 years or more. We saw one in our office the other day that the surrender penalty went indefinitely. Essentially, you could never get your money back.
I didn't know they had such a thing.
Yeah, I didn't. That's what I said. That is exactly what I said. I said, I didn't know they had such a thing. I said, well, yes, they do. Apparently, they do. So, anyway, we highly encourage people to do a background check. Broker check can do it for you. And, again, if you go to our website, moneymatters.com, at Money Matters, look for lies, lawsuits, and levies.
Liars, levies, and lawsuits.
Yeah, something along those lines. It's a short webinar we did.
It's like 4 or 5 minutes long.
Something like that. It's helpful. Anyway, we need to take a quick break. This is Hanson McLean. We'll be right back.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Can't always catch Money Matters on the radio each week? Get a podcast of the show delivered to your device every week. Visit moneymatters.com. Now back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for
joining us. I like this band. I have some on my iTunes. Black Keys, that's it.
Black Keys.
I've got some of that on my Apple device here. Matter of fact, I did subscribe to their new streaming service.
You like that?
I should be on Spotify though. I heard that it's better, but
I listen to
it's already on there.
I listen to one of the major broadcasting companies has an app I listen to.
Oh, that we might be affiliated with. So I probably shouldn't be promoting any unless I was going to promote. There's a prime. We talk about conflicts of interest in the industry,
right there.
So here's a conflict we live in. So this station is owned, that you're listening to, by a parent company. It's one number of different stations. Some of them have their own app that has streaming music. So if you were to ask, hey, which app should I listen to for streaming music? We'd say, we would be tempted to say the app of the stations that broadcast us.
Yes.
Unfortunately, you would understand that, right? So, unfortunately, for a lot of investment advisors, that's the life they live at work as well.
Or they say, you say, what do you think about this product? And you say, well,
I get paid
my
chickadee, more.
I get paid a little more if I sell one that looks kind of like that, but isn't exactly that.
Which is why Hanson McLean, being a fee-based investment advisor, we are totally agnostic in our fee-based plans of whether it doesn't matter.
And we do full financial planning, so we make sure that whatever we do recommend
what did you
is
say? Chickadee? What? Little chickadee?
Hey, chickadee.
What is that?
W.C. Fields. This is the three people over the age of 80 that listen to this show. Hey, my chickadee.
You know what? I kind of laugh like I know what you're talking about. Well, I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right, look it up. Look it up, son.
But it reminds me of a friend of mine that he's 61 or so, 62. He loves old movies, like old movies. And he goes on these cruise ships Well, he might as well be 15 compared to the average ages. There are all these movie stars that are like in their 80s.
Oh, and that's what he goes for.
Yes, he loves it. And he comes back. He's like a kid in a candy store. He's so excited. He met so-and-so that at this point, just about everyone's forgotten about because they haven't done a movie in 58 years.
Except for him.
He goes on these things. He would clearly get your...
Well, he sounds like a bright guy. If you'd like to join this show, 888-2-HANSEN, 888-2-HANSEN, Hanson. We're going to talk to Corey in Durham, California.
Corey, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Yeah, I was calling to ask you about doing a Roth in addition to some retirement that I've already saved.
All
righty.
I'm 44 years old, and I've mainly just been in 401k, and I've got a small savings for some college funds that I put together for the kids.
How old are the kids?
One of 16, my oldest, and a 12-year-old daughter.
And do you have them in 529 plans?
Yes, I do.
Okay, perfect.
Good.
Yeah. But the main question is adding a Roth to my portfolio at my age, is that a good choice? And, you know, being 44, I've always heard it's kind of a younger man's type investment plan, but I don't know if that's something I should add or not.
Well, slow here.
It really depends.
I'm confused by the 44 being a younger man's, and you're like an old guy now at 44?
I kind of feel that way.
Oh, I thought he meant you were the young man.
No.
I thought he meant maybe I'm becoming an old man when 44 is the young man.
No, 44 is the young. He's,
oh, so you're the old man.
He's the old man.
Okay.
All right. So how much do you have in your 401ks now?
I've got about $500,000 in a 401k.
Okay. And is any of that Roth contributions?
No.
So they're all pre-tax.
What's your ballpark family income?
Combined is probably 130.
Yeah. Here's the challenge. So you are the way our tax rates work today, they're quite progressive. So you have almost no income, like my 20-year-old daughter makes next to nothing when she works in the summertime. She's a college student. She pays essentially no taxes. So she pays into taxes, but it files her tax return. She gets it all back. So we have some that pays. So Roth IRA is perfect for her because she's not going to get a tax deduction. But so then some income is taxed at 10%, a little bit set tax 10% federal. Then it's 15% for a big chunk. Then it goes 25%, then 27, all the way up to 39.6%.
And then you have the state of California as well,
which goes from 0 to 9.3 at around 100,000. And then it can go up to 13.3.
So, Corey, so you're talking about making these...
So you're in a pretty relatively high tax bracket today.
You're talking about making a Roth contribution in addition to your 401k contributions, correct?
I was debating about just switching my entire contribution.
Got it.
Not moving money into it, but just future contributions into it.
So do you expect that you'll retire into the state of California or possibly a lower income tax state if one such exists at the time you retire?
Yeah. Probably California.
Okay.
So here's what you're doing right now. And I like the why your question because...
I have one more question for him. Will you receive a monthly pension when you retire?
No.
Okay.
No, I won't.
So right now, you are making a bet that your tax bracket in the future will be at least the same as it is today, if not lower. That's the bet you're making by taking a pre-tax 401k. I actually like the idea of saying maybe I should take some small portion and hedge the other direction. So I think, I'm 49. I think it was when I was 44, right around that age, that I chose to put a little in my 401k on a pre-tax basis.
After tax.
I'm sorry, after tax, on a Roth basis.
After tax. So for the rest of the listeners, the difference between the two is on a regular contribution to a 401k, you get a tax deduction. It grows tax deferred. It comes out tax free. In a Roth, it's exactly the opposite, which is you do not get a tax deduction. It grows tax deferred and it comes out tax free.
Now, so I personally
I was rushing through that. And a regular contribution, it grows tax deferred and comes out taxed. A Roth is exactly the opposite.
Thank you, Ben. So I don't think it's a bad idea to hedge your bet some. I would not take your entire Roth contribution. I mean, sorry, your entire 401k contribution. If you're going to do something, maybe have 80% still go in the traditional and 20% into the Roth.
And that's just a hedge.
We don't know. The problem is we have no idea of knowing what Congress is going to do in the future. I mean, but if you,
I disagree with you, Scott. I disagree with you. I think that if we looked at his financial situation, just guessing at age 44, Corey, your house is going to be paid off by the time you retire.
Almost, not okay. Quite, probably. Yeah.
Just say his income is going to be lower in retirement for sure.
I think that
right now your expenses are higher by far.
He's got two kids. He's got a 12 and 16 year old. They've been living off him for way too long.
And it's going to continue
until
and his house expenses will be much lower in retirement than they are today. You're about the max right now, almost. The college is really going to.
Yeah, I don't. I wouldn't take that. I wouldn't even take that bet. I would bet that your tax rate is going to be.
Didn't you contribute to a Roth 401k?
I reversed myself completely.
So did I.
But I
put some in.
Well, the reason I did is I don't know where I'm going to end up retiring if I ever do retire. I doubt if I retire, but I don't know where I'm going to end up. And I didn't want to take that bet.
It's a bet, Corey.
But
on the look at in the for the argument for the Roth is that if he could afford to contribute the same amount into the Roth, he would at retirement he would have more
net spendable income.
Because people spend the tax savings, they don't save the tax savings. It gets spent somewhere.
He's a pretty darn good saver, Scott. He's 44. He's got $500,000 in his 401k.
Yep.
So, Corey, would you? I assume you're a fairly decent saver.
I'm very. Disciplined.
If you're gonna do any, just do some small percentage.
Yeah.
And we will only know the right answer.
If you were gonna do any, don't do any more than 20%. But otherwise, if you left it alone, I couldn't argue against that either.
Yeah. So I wouldn't swing it all to the Roth.
I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Yeah. Hey, good luck. And thank good you. Luck on those 16-year-old driving and everything else.
Yeah.
As I'd mentioned last week when I was in Cuba, the first day I leave, my son hit a mailbox. But anyway.
Perfect.
In the car. That was really good. Perfect. Really happy.
So anyway,
that.
We're here to day promote one, our show, not talk about your family problems,
dinging up
Scott.
The cars.
So this is the time of the show where
he's
we say...
He's not my family anymore. I disowned them. He's 18
This is the time
now.
Of the show where we say, go to moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com. And if you go to moneymatters.com/book, we have a...
Forward slash book.
A big discount on Scott Hansen's book, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. We'll be back next week. This has been Hansen McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hansen McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.